She is coming.
And public meeting, so we keep the door open, right? Just want to make sure. So before we start though, so Mr. Jones, we welcome you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And feel free to ask questions, or if we go over something that you don't quite understand, please let us slow down a little bit. So I guess the first, okay, so we're going to start at 12 o'clock and 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, excuse me. So the first order of business on item A would be the discussion and vote to approve the minutes of May 14. Everybody had an opportunity to look at the minutes.
I'll move that they be approved.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thanks. And then on item B, we will discuss the investment officer funds activity report. And Jesse, I believe you got that?
Yes, sir. So I will be discussing the activity for both trust funded and insurance funded guarantee funds for the period of March 1st, 2014 through February 28th, 2015. So basically a 12-month period. On page 4, the first trust funded guarantee fund activity report is reflected or provided. And basically what I did, I broke it down into two. For the year, I broke it down into two reports of 6 months each to make it easier to discuss. So the first report there is March 1st, 2014 through August 31st, 2014. And for kind of illustrate the, as you know, on the Trust Funded Guarantee Fund, we collect an assessment up to $1 million. Everything on the left-hand side of that bar there that you see is true guarantee fund activity. Everything on the right-hand side is where we actually sub-account any seizures, funds that we seize from funeral homes, restitution, just where we can get that money deposited and until we figure out what we're going to do with it. So basically what I'm going to be discussing is everything on the left-hand side of that bar. Everything on the right-hand side, again, is just is where we put for temporarily park some money in there or funds until we figure out what we're going to do. So the first one that I will talk about is trustee fees, $71.97. That's, you know, what these various trustee fees that we are assessed. The next line down is interest earned of $6,981.87. And under the guarantee fund deposits column, you'll notice that number 9, $11,196.75. That was actually approved at the last guarantee fund meeting. That was a claim that was presented. The council approved it, and this is the actual withdrawal of the funds from the fund itself. Okay. The same is true for item number 14. And on the bottom there, on the comments, I'm sorry, should I go ahead and note it? That's the actual description of those various items. So on number 14, you will also notice that this is another claim that was presented at the last meeting. And it was also approved on that meeting. So this is the actual withdrawal of the funds from the guarantee fund. Item number six, which is $300, that's actually, if you go back to page 63 of the booklet, that amount would be reflected too. And that is basically a restitution that is being collected from DJ Turner. He previously had a permit, didn't report contracts to us, and this is money that's owed back to the guarantee fund because the guarantee fund actually made good on some claims, and this is his repayment. He has, you know, he's been going on for many years, but you know, we're getting the checks from the probationary officer, so it's gone through the system, and we're collecting the funds as he remits them to us. So it's been through our legal, it's been through AGs, it's gone through the whole process. So he's just paying us whatever he can, I guess. So that is the activity for that 6 month period. Number 10, yes. Number 10, This is actually a claim that will be presented to you at this meeting, and it's behind column C, which Russell Reese will discuss in our next section. Okay, so that is, again, item 10 is a claim that we did pay. It's actually four individual claims under the $6,500 limit that we can process individually. But this, it's a combined, it was four of them, that's why the total was $12,000. But I want to let you know that it's individually, it was under the limit that requires prior council approval. Okay. Is everybody okay with that? In page 5 and 6, you know, I actually reconcile these accounts every quarter. So page 5 and page 6 represents the summary of what we just talked about on page 4. And you can see I prepare them. Stephanie signs off on them. And so that's, if you have any questions there, let me know. But we'll go on. If not, we'll go on to page 7. This is, again, another 6 months period activity report. On here, this is for September 1st, 2014 through February 28th of 2015. And we'll go over number 6. That is another claim by, that's going to be presented to the claim for possible votes and approval. The same is true for number 13. And these are going to be discussed in sections D and E of the booklet after I conclude. The only thing, the other activity that we had in there was 2615 in trustee fees and interest earned of $4,973.07. Item 11 is, again, Mr. Turner, $100 that we received for that period. You will notice that on page 8 and 9 are the quarterly reports that are associated with this report. On page 9, the grand total of $1,290,671.37 balances to my ending total on page 7. So that's how I basically reconcile. So if you see on page 7 there at the very end, the total grand total, because even though some of those funds are not associated with the grant fund true assessments, I still put them in the same account. So I'm reconciling them for you. And on page 9, you will see what makes, where all the money is actually invested. We have some money in the Texas Treasury safekeeping. And we have 3 CDs with local, not local, with state chartered banks. And also we have a money market with Pilgrim banks. So the total of all these funds will tie back to the actual balance at the guarantee fund that we have. And I have in this report, let me go ahead and let's discuss page 9 just for, in case there's any questions there. Again, this is a quarterly report, and I have the beginning book balances, and I have any interest in income received, trustee fees, deductions, and additions, which are actually discussed below with the notations on 1 and 2. And I come up with the grand total as of February 28, 2015. Right below that, I actually have the trust balances or balances at each various bank that will tie back to that. So at any point, you can tell me, you know, what makes up the $1.29 million. I say, well, some of it is in the safekeeping. We have 2 CDs of $240,000 and so forth. And I'm also providing to you the interest rate at that, the current interest rate, and the maturity dates of any. So on the safekeeping, it's just it matures the following day since it's.
Would you mind explaining, Jesse,
sure,
about the CDs, that the what the 200 and why at the 240,000 level?
Yes, sir.
For our new member?
Sure. So, Mr. Jones, before we used to have all the money at the Texas Treasury safekeeping, but you will notice that the interest rate is very, very low.
Right.
So what we did is we tried to go out and get a higher interest rate, and we did that by getting some individual CDs or CDs with these banks. And we are keeping them under the $250,000 limit for FDIC insurance. So that's why all of these accounts, not counting the safekeeping, are under the $250,000 limit. We also monitor that, and when it gets close to that, we start transferring money either into the safekeeping, or we'll decide if we need to do something at that point, move it somewhere else. But we definitely want to keep it under the 250 for FDIC insurance.
So as I would tell you, as the regulator of these banks, and if the bank closed, we would be the one to close it, so we would have advance notice, obviously, but it's still the appearance that it's under the insured amount seems to be good.
Right. Also, you know, the purchase of CDs was previously approved by the council, so we brought that to the table, and it was agreed that we would go into some vice CDs and money markets and try to get a higher interest rate than what the safekeeping is paying.
Good luck with that.
All right. Well, that concludes the trust funding.
For our new member, you notice it's still 1.29 million on our trust funded. We previously had assessed the industry $1 per contract to get it to $1 million threshold. Well, since it hit $1 million, we have not assessed the industry $1 per contract. So I just want to make a point on the trust funded balance, and we haven't in many years on that.
Okay. Well, if no questions, we could go to page 10. Page 10 describes or reports the activity for the insurance funded guarantee fund. That was started, actually the law became effective September 1st of 2009. We started collecting in 2010. But this is the activity for the whole 12-month period. And since there's not much activity in here, I was able to provide it in one report. So this page 10 covers the whole 12-month period. The same thing is true for here. We are collecting $1 for each new contract, insurance funded contract, until it reaches $1 million. So at this point, at the rate, we're actually collecting about $70,000 on average a year. For 2013, we collected $68,896. In 2014, we collected $69,900. The reason why you don't see that full amount in here is because they're due on March 1st. The assessments are due March 1st, and some of them come in a little bit early, and some of them come in a little bit after. And since this ends on February 28th, you're not going to see a clean full picture there, but that's the reason why this doesn't match the amounts I just gave you earlier. So it's a combination. So for example, you may pay your assessment a little bit early on February 1st. I get the check and I'm able to deposit it before it concludes. But since it's not due till March 1st, there are some that send in a little bit right before the deadline, and I don't have time to get it into the bank in time. So that's why it's a little different there. But again, yes.
Is there a trend with these?
Sure.
For
I was
a year, is it going
sure.
slightly up? Is it staying fairly
well,
steady? Or
it's,
is it?
You know, 2013 saw about $69,000 mm-hmm. Collected assessments. In 2014, we saw about $70,000, so it's pretty close. With the average, I think it's going to take about 10 years to get up to the $1 million. So if we stay at the $70,000 average. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty consistent the last 2 years that I've seen the assessments.
I will also add, though, that 70 is net. So if you, it's just, it's new and outstanding, but if you sold it and
oh,
mature
right.
in the same year, you don't make probably the dollar. So mm-hmm. it's not, you can't say there were 70,000 new contracts sold because
yeah.
there could be, you know, more. And I don't know how many mature within a year, Tom, you probably know more statistically how many mature in the first year when a policy is issued. So it's a little.
Hopefully not too many.
It's probably small.
And to further this for the new member, as you notice, there's no withdrawals.
Well, I was going to ask about that. Is this just sitting there and growing?
The purpose is, you may or may not recall, we had a NPS many years ago. Everyone continues to deal with the fallout of that.
Right.
What happened here, this fund is specifically now to protect the insurance-funded contracts written after that date to guarantee they're going to get what they bargained for.
Okay.
And what I mean by that on the trust now, it's always been you can protect them, and if it was necessary to increase that money to get the contract honored, the guarantee fund could approve those claims. Previously, we did not have that with insurance. Now, these will impact only those that were written after that time. If a particular funeral home does go out of business and there's additional money that's needed to get that contract honored, that's when it would be presented to the guarantee fund for consideration. So that's why you don't see much, right? It could be years until that even comes about. Then again, we might have a fiasco of a big insurance funeral home that closes that just wrote a bunch of contracts in 2014. We don't know.
Hopefully not.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and just conclude by saying that pages 11, 12, 13, and 14 are the four quarters that make up that 1 year, the 12-month period we discussed. Page 14 again, it will note that it does balance back to my ending balance on the, on page ten. And all these funds are held with the safekeeping, treasury safekeeping at this time, simply because I guess it's, we're still building it up right now. So, and again, it's, for, like Russell said, it's for the guaranteed performance of the insurance funded. The same is true for the trust funding. I will take any questions or any comments at this time.
Entertain a motion to approve the investment officer's report, reports.
I move that we.
Is there a second?
Report.
Second.
All right. Motion and a second to approve the reports. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? All ayes. Thank you. Okay, Russell, I believe we go to you to item C.
Yes, sir. The following items, C, D, and E, I will be discussing, and a little background for you, Mr. Jones. The guarantee fund previously has delegated some limited dollar amounts that we don't necessarily have to get approval from the council before we can pay a claim. And the dollar amount is $6,500. And we get the same documentation that we're going to present to you today, but in lieu of waiting a year, that to pay restitution to a particular family or funeral home, if a claim is under that threshold, we document, get all the information, present it to the commissioner for his approval, and then we're required to bring it to y'all's attention for official vote. Again, same documentation, it's just a dollar threshold that we found sometimes where it's inhibiting these people getting their money in a more timely fashion. Okay? So the following claims that we're going to be talking about were all under that threshold, fortunately, and none were in excess of $6,500 on an individual claim.
Okay, individual. It's not total.
Cumulative, that is correct, yes, sir. So the first one is on C, and it's related to Tom Walker Funeral Home. In the documentation, you'll see as first is a memorandum. What we do is try to present the facts for the commissioner with the support so he can look at the documentation to whether approve it or not based on the information given to him. This one, unfortunately, has been one that has been previously presented on different claims to the council, that what's happened is Tom Walker had a permit, a trust funded permit. He shut the doors, actually then sold it to a different funeral home who now has sold it again to another owner. So we do have a funeral home there. But unfortunately, some of these contracts were not presented upon seizure when we initially seized them. So what happens is when we seize a funeral home, we get all the records, we account for all those individuals, and hopefully we get them all at that time. But historically, as the council knows, more and more pop up at a later time that were not part of the records. And this, again, is one of those that popped up after our seizure. Now, again, I don't know if you have particular questions for the memo. I don't want to go all the specifics, but you'll see on page 16 will be an actual breakdown of four individual claims that came forward after that. And what is broken down is by contract, by name, and dollar amount that we went ahead and processed the claim. What we also do, based on the documentation, you'll see, for example, each one will have further support and broken out. For example, Pat Clare, you will notice on page 19, we'll start the backup support for Pat Clare. Okay? Pat Clare, as indicated, had a trust funded contract, actually had paid in $5,000. The net claim is going to be $4,500. And what we were able to do, based on the documentation presented, we actually get a copy of the pre-need, copy of the at-need, proof of payment, and then we'll do what we call a pre-need to at-need comparison if they've honored those contracts. I'm sure you're familiar with those forms.
Yes.
Okay. And what we've done is that did a pre-need to at-need contract was honored, and based on the funeral home providing those goods and services, we're requesting the $4,500 claim be approved for that particular person on Pat Clare. Do you have any questions on that first claim?
No,
Okay. The second claim, we'll start on page 23 for Teresa Ortiz. Same documentation will be presented. We have a copy of a pre-need. We'll have a copy of the at-need. And we do a pre-need to at-need comparison and verify what the dollar amount should be. And if it all it balances out, we recommend payment of the claim. As indicated on page 16, we should authorize $1,559.53 for Ortiz. That would be the second claim. The third claim for that one will be Christine Brown. Again, the dollar amounts are reflected on page 16, where we're asking for $1,975.50, and that support for that claim will start on page 26. Again, Christine Brown will have a copy of a trust-funded prepaid funeral contract. You'll also have a copy of the at-need form in there. And again, the pre-need to at-need worksheet done indicates the things, the items were honored. So, go ahead.
The other form that's, or the other thing that's required is that it's proof of payment, but on these it's easy because like on page 27, it was paid in full. But in some instances, you'll likely see a payment card or they'll bring their canceled checks because they have to show not only that they bought it, but if it was paid for.
So y'all would accept like we've done, just a chart of showing payments received by the funeral home.
Right. If it's like a ledger card or something, and the funeral home signs off on it every time a payment's made, a lot of times we see those kind of things. Or if it's the ledger card from the funeral home, yes.
Okay. Now, and one other question before we go on. The less retainage, is that, these are group ones, or they take commission out?
No, these are going to be plan twos where we are deducting the retainage because they're not authorized to get the restitution for that. So when the funeral home initially sold it on a plan two, we already deducted that amount from the claim.
Okay.
But if there was a plan one contract, we'd pay the whole amount.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I don't see too many plan ones. They've kind of, I'm sure they're still out there, but most of them are right in the plan two where it's the 10%. But if it was a plan one, we would provide the 100% refund.
Well, still one of the rare ones, yeah.
Yes. you're keeping the fund for a future date. You're still going to get those funds.
Sure.
Yeah, you're just delaying when you're going to get those.
I'm curious, Russell, is there a statute of limitations beyond which you would not, it's before the guarantee fund, if there was a pre-need before the guarantee fund was established, you wouldn't honor.
We wouldn't even bring it to the council.
I just wanted.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
That was information that he got.
We've had some in the years and years ago, and which probably started the fund in the 80s. If they were written prior to that date, they wouldn't qualify for guarantee fund coverage.
Okay.
Like in the 60s and the 50s, unfortunately.
Okay.
And Steffi might know, I'm dating myself, but I believe my history indicated something in El Paso, a big fiasco went under that caused the creation, but that's even before my time. That's
which
what
is like the insurance one. Once it starts, anything prior to that doesn't qualify.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. So I believe that, well, I haven't talked about number four. There'll be another claim called James Franklin Keeney on page 16. And again, it will be the net claim is $3,965.35. And the backup for that particular claim will be on page, beginning on page 30. You'll have an actual, again, a pre-need and at-need. At-need and pre-need was compared, and we are recommending that $3,965.35 for that claim also be paid. Based on all four of the individual claims, that totals $12,038 for that particular claims to be paid are authorized by the Guarantee Fund Council.
Yeah.
Oh, Stephanie asked that I kind of give you a little more history too, because our protocol normally is we're going to go after those funeral homes, you know, if we can find that particular person. Mm-hmm. And in addition to getting the guarantee fund authorization, we're going to make demand if we can find those individuals. Unfortunately, on this funeral home, that person has passed away, and the wife who got the funeral home also sold the funeral home and has no money. In fact, I think Mr. Cecile wrote the executor and said there is no money. So there's no really, we had claims previously on this one that we did that, and the documentation, there was no point again writing another demand because there's no money to begin.
Right. And actually, the funeral home was just purchased by the new entity by just assuming the debt from the bank. So it wasn't like there was any money exchanged really from the new owner to the wife. The executor would actually tell me money was owed to him, so there was just no funds available to collect. So that's right.
And that will complete my discussion on, or if you have any questions again on C.
Do we need a motion on each one of them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Or it will the groups.
I would move that we approve the claims on the Walker funeral home trust that's been presented.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Three ayes. The motion carries. So, Mr. Reese, we go to item D.
Item D is going to be a discussion of vote to pay authorization of a Washington Memorial Funeral Home claim. Now, you'll find the beginning of this claim on page 33 of your booklet. Now, this also kind of gives you an outline of the memorandum why we're requesting a payment to be authorized. This one's going to be a little unique compared to the other ones that the pre-need was honored, because this particular contract first was a broken contract, went to a different funeral home, so they were not required to honor the previous goods and services, okay? However, the family has indicated that they requested the $1,895 you'll see on page 33, and then it'll be summarized on page 34 to pay that $1,895 related to this prepaid funeral contract. Again, a little more detail is on 33. I would like to point out a couple things on this memorandum. The delay that we encountered getting some documentation to pay this claim. Initially, way back in October 21st, 2013 is when Evergreen, the new funeral home that honored this contract, asked us to look into this matter because it appeared that this dollar amounts were not properly accounted for when we seized the Washington funeral home. This is a different seizure. We did do this seizure in Dallas, Fort Worth. I hate to say again, this gentleman has also passed away, and the son was running the funeral home. If I remember correctly, our seizure only resulted in a handful, right, of 3 to 5 contracts total that we had, that we seized. But based on that, even with that, this additional individual showed us more money that was paid to that funeral home that didn't have the records to support it upon our seizure. Again, as indicated, it's unfortunate. I wish all the records were ticked and tied every time we seized something, that everything was properly accounted for, we could take care of everyone at one time. But as indicated, everything keeps falling out at a later date. We get additional documentation, more proof that maybe John Smith is prepaid that showed $500, he paid $2,000. And as long as we get the support to document that, then he's entitled to that additional proceeds. So again, this is to authorize the $1,895 additional funds that the purchaser was able to demonstrate to us that should have been on deposit initially with our Washington funeral home.
And this actually was a plan one.
Yeah.
So the
yes, I just noticed that. That's like on page 34, it just shows a Plan 1 contract, so that's correct. And do you have any questions related to item D?
Now, this is one that was written on an Anthony contract, right? Is that right?
No, this is such an old, it's a Plan One on page 38.
There, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir, it's on page 38.
It's an old one.
It's a very old one.
Oh, yeah, that is, yeah.
And also, Mr. Wallace, like 39 you indicated earlier, flip to 39, that's an also ledger card that to give us information of paid in full. And on page 40, it will demonstrate they gave him credit for that amount. On the method of payment.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the claim?
Motion to approve.
Can I have a motion second?
Second.
10 seconds, all in favor? Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. So, Mr. Reese, item E.
Item E is one more claim under 6,500 that we processed during this period. This relates to Pruitt's Mortuary. Again, this is a very, very old seizure that the department did many, many years ago. In fact, I remember it because I did the seizure, but it's a long time ago. And you continue to think that you've identified everything related to that, but periodically something bubbles up. And this one on page 41 will actually give a description of why we're requesting $2,600 to be authorized by the council on this claim. This seizure, when we perform, we actually are required to bid them out. And we find other funeral homes that will be willing to take them on certain liability limitations, such as some will take it as is, some funeral homes will agree to pay no matter what, but most of them will limit it to these particular contracts with this particular balance, and we will agree to honor those contracts. But if something comes forward that was not part of the dollar amounts and or contract, sometimes they'll say, we want the guarantee fund to kick in because we don't want to take that risk or liability. Right. This one, as indicated, actually was part of the contract at least. But again, the balance that was reflected at the time of seizure was only $796.50. Again, they came forward with additional documentation and proof to show that the actual amount that should have been on deposit at the time was $3,800. And then what I want to point out, it gives you a step-by-step on page 43. It kind of outlines the dollar amounts and how we got to the total refund that was required of $2,600. As you can see, it starts with the contract amount, balance due per receipt, the total paid in, less again retainage, and then less amount that was on deposit of $796, and the total refund was $2,600. As indicated in this letter to the consumer, though, we advised them that Allen Mortuary was going to be advised of this, that they were going to get $796 directly from them because they had that on deposit a part of the seizure. But the guarantee fund was only exposed to the $2,600 of the claim. Y'all have, and again, back support on page 44, Pruitt's Mortuary contract, some of these old contracts. On page 45 is another ledger card with further support that was presented. And then 46 is an actual copy of an at-need provided by the Boyd Funeral Home that actually did the service. Do y'all have any questions or anything related to that claim?
Take your time. Be comfortable.
Yes, please do.
Okay, and the claim is being paid, was paid back to the funeral home or to the purchaser?
This one actually was paid to Barbara Mason.
Okay.
It's sort of like it was a cancellation.
Yes.
Okay. Because they had paid the... by the contract, they paid the service off.
Right.
They paid out of pocket, that's correct.
I would move that we approve the claim.
Do we have a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. That motion carries. So now we go to item F, and Jesse.
Yes. Okay, so item F relates to the Administrative Memorandum 2016, which is a policy that governs the investment of funds on related to the Guarantee Fund. We are required to review it annually. So the last time we reviewed it was May of 2014, so we're reviewing it this year. Pages 47 through 54 is the pages that actually highlight the sections. Pages 55 through 62 is the draft of the proposed memo. So let me go ahead and start off with page 47, kind of discussing the changes. Obviously, the first things we did was change the dates. So on we changed the date. Also, we're removing the revision, number of revisions, since we review it annually. I'm not sure that's necessary to keep on the number of revisions. The other thing that we did on the second paragraph there is we basically revised the language there to basically be more clear of what we're trying to do. We're trying to basically outline the authorized investments. So this is the purpose of the memo, to authorize that, and not so much to stay in line with the Public Funds Investment Act, because the Guarantee Fund is really not subject to those requirements. So,
I think what we're trying to say is that this update doesn't have anything to do with changes to the Public Funds Investment Act, which legally we're not required to follow, but we try to follow as much as possible. These updates came, Jesse and I have to go to training every 2 years, and we went to the training earlier this year. And after the training, we looked at our policy and said there's some clarifications that need to be done. So that's what that paragraph says. It's really not because the law changed, and we're going to get to some of the law changes, but it was more clarifications after we went to the training.
Thank you. Okay. We can go on to page 48. And this is the section that has most of the changes here, revisions. As Stephanie discussed, we did go to that training, and at that point, our instructor made some comments that made us rethink some of the language in here. One of the main things that we wanted to do was just basically change it to mirror our current practice. Right now, we do have, as discussed earlier, some funds in the Treasury safekeeping and some in the money market CDs or in the CDs. I'm sorry. We thought the language, as it were before, was a little confusing as far as what we could do. So basically, our attempt here is to say all the funds that are held with the Texas safekeeping are subject to those requirements and not subject to the requirements under the section below. So the way I read before, it appeared that those funds with the safekeeping were also, those investments also had to meet these requirements. And the safekeeping has to follow the investment guidelines under 404 of the government code. So we thought that revising this section to make that more clear, that anything in that section with the safekeeping is it has to meet those requirements of 404. And any other investments that we decide to do outside of the safekeeping then have to follow the investment guidelines below.
Okay.
So again, paragraph one was that we were trying to clarify that. And in the second paragraph, we basically said anything outside of that, you know, we actually decided to go into other investments, then have to meet the requirements below. Is there any questions with that language? I mean, again, these are proposed revisions. And if you have any clarifying, any suggestions, we welcome them. And that was the purpose of those revisions. But definitely, if you think we can style it a little differently, let us know. We also removed the less than 1 year, because in the safekeeping, we actually keep it there for longer than 1 year. That is, again, our current practice. We keep the money in there, helps us keep liquidity and so forth, and that's how we pay the claims out. As you notice, all the claims that Russell was discussing earlier, it comes out of the safekeeping. That's our operating account, if you want to think of it that way. Okay.
All right.
Let's go on to page 49. And here is basically minor revisions. What we were trying to do is basically clarify in the formatting that the bids for CDs or these requirements here orally in writing only applies to bids for CDs and not for the other investments that are outlined up here, for example, deposit accounts, money markets. So it was just basically taking that bullet point kind of and then putting an extra indention on that section to basically make it clear that bids for CDs must comply with these four bullet points in there. So that's the only change that would happen there. There are no other changes throughout the rest of the memo. And like I said, page 55 through 62 will give you a clean version of the revisions. And I'm not sure if anybody has any other questions or if you open it up for any comments.
Oh, really?
Let's see, that is a voting item, so. Could I hear a motion to approve the revised administrative memorandum 2016?
I'll move that.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Motion and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, is it time to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
And then there's been a bill filed this session, House Bill 4209, that updates or amends the Public Funds Investment Act. It's about halfway through the system, so I'm not sure it will pass this session, but we have gone through it. Two of the changes relate to mutual funds, and we aren't involved in mutual funds, so that wouldn't affect us at all right now, but we would still update our policy for that. The actual bill analysis says that this is being done so that political subdivisions and municipalities have fewer constraints. So that's under the purpose of the bill. So the two mutual fund items really wouldn't affect us. They also have a change related to certificates of deposit, and it said you would have to have verification that the bank has a deposit rating of at least a 1 or the equivalent of a nationally recognized credit rating agency, and that's not in the current policy, so we would have to go back and add that and then go back and look at our CDs to make sure that they meet those guidelines if they do pass. So what we would do is if this does pass, it would be effective September 1st, and so we would probably go ahead and make sure that our CDs met this qualification and then bring the change back to y'all next time. We would still implement it, but just bring it back to you next time.
Is there any benefit to go over the our pending bills that we have?
Because we don't have a funeral bill.
Okay, you're right. Would be of interest, though, but okay. All right, we go to item G, Russell.
Yes, as indicated, it's not necessarily a voting item, but what we like to do for the council is kind of give you an update as we discuss collection efforts, when we have restitution that's being monitored, when we have fines and penalties. What we do is actually provide you in G some breakdown of those payments and the individuals that we're going after for restitution and fines. Okay, with that, it starts with page 63. And as Jesse indicated earlier, related to that Turner Brothers, it has been on our sheet since 1994. And so it will probably be on the sheet way after I retire. But he is paying on the dollar amount that was agreed upon. And I don't know exactly how many more years, but obviously based on the balance, $40,000, it's going to be a long time. But he's paying. So that's Turner Brothers. The next one refers to Daniel Brothers. It was an order against Mr. Brothers at the time that you may or not remember, Gaffney. And Gaffney owned some funeral homes in Central Texas, some cemeteries. he actually worked for him for a period of time and actually sold some trust-funded prepaid funeral contracts. Unfortunately, their particular contracts associated with Mr. Brothers also didn't get it properly accounted for. So way back in 2010, we entered into an order with him to make restitution. And he has been paying, as indicated by every month payments, and he's down to $23,900 left to pay on those particular trust-funded contracts. Page 64 is another unfortunate cease and desist that we did several years ago against Foster and Brown Funeral Home in Athens. Individually, Mr. Brown had owned the funeral home. He has since sold the funeral home. The other funeral home that acquired it went out of business, partially, possibly because some of his business activities. But we were able to find Mr. Brown this time. As Stephanie indicated earlier, we tried to track these folks down. We did find him. He was a funeral director in Dallas. And when we made demand, he actually entered into an agreed order to pay back the restitution that we knew about. And this chart indicates since 2011, he owed $43,000 to begin with a $25,000 penalty, and he is current. And as indicated, the restitution has all been made, and now we're collecting fines and penalties. On this particular one, we were able to bid it out, as we indicated earlier, to another funeral home. That other funeral home agreed to honor it with the money that was on deposit. So all this additional money that we were fortunate to collect has been sent to that new funeral home as earnings that have been allocated to the other contracts to honor. So this is one, a unique one. We normally don't are able to get all the money and at least apply it toward the interest for that other funeral home, because really he agreed to honor it with those set prices with no growth. The next one on page 64 is called James Lister. It's more of an individual contract. It's not like a pattern like Wayne Brown has sold multiple ones. As indicated, he sold $3,000 on February 13th. We've been struggling to get collection back and forth. Last payment from him was in May 2014. We normally, what we do is when we're not able to collect, we work with the AG and make a demand, a referral to the AG for demand from them. And then hopefully the AG can collect, and sometimes they cannot collect. But they have more of an ammunition to put liens on properties and such for collection purposes. And so as of right now, the last information I have, they still owe us money. I'm not sure exactly if we will or will not collect it.
But the AG's office does have a final default judgment against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Page 65, on the top of 65, this is one that we had dealt with for many years, called the Hal Doran Funeral Home. Hal Doran Funeral Home that was owned by Kevin Keeney, they got away absconded with multiple contracts and hundreds of thousands of dollars of prepaid funeral contracts. We have briefly advised the council many years ago on this ongoing process. Good news now, though, we were able to find a successor funeral home. They had agreed to honor the contracts with no growth, and these particular amounts that Mr. Keeney has agreed to pay, it would be the same situation like on the Wayne Brown. If we're able ever to collect all of it, then that will go to the new funeral home as earnings to allocate toward the growth. But we'll cross our fingers and see if we're able to secure the restitution. As you can see, beginning it was $171,000 of restitution. This gentleman also was referred to the DA. He had criminal prosecution brought against him, and so he also worked out a settlement with the DA's office. The next one on page 65, there's a multiple one referred to as Gonzalez Funeral Home, and you see there's multiple names related to Gonzalez Funeral Home. And the reason why there was multiple parties that we went to hearing against, there wasn't just one person who owned the funeral home. There were several parties that did what appeared to be the illegal activity. We actually had a hearing here, which was very interesting, and they kept, he did it, she did it, and such. So ultimately, the order, we got a judgment order against them for restitution, and this is the breakdown of their requirement that they have to pay back. Now, this is the first one I'm familiar with, and Debbie, correct me it's referred to as they were all held jointly and...
Jointly and severally liable, depending on if Myrna, for example, was the mom, and then Aiden and Mark were sons, and if Myrna and Aiden participated together on a contract, then they each are liable for it. And once one of them pays, it'll be satisfied.
For both of them.
For both of them, correct. And of these three people, well, first of all, the funeral home itself is out of business, so there's nothing coming, and it's just a DBA. There's nothing coming from them. And Mark Gonzalez is apparently still working as a funeral director, so he's motivated to pay, or else he'd lose his funeral director license. So he entered into an agreement with us and is actually paying $500 a month. Aiden and Myrna have not been responsive, so we referred them to the Attorney General's office, and I believe the AG has gotten a default judgment against both of them, but I think the prospects of getting anything is pretty slim from Myrna and Aiden. So we should hopefully look to see Mark eventually paying, you know, over $50,000.
That he was involved.
Yes.
That his name was on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and a penalty was awarded of $29,000 attributed to him.
Wasn't it not necessarily that your name was on, or when you were also the funeral director in charge?
Correct. Yeah, this was a family, and they'd take turns who would be the funeral director in charge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Okay. The last one on page 65 is referred to, we'll call him Lonnie Wright. I'm familiar with that name. Unfortunately, as indicated in the narrative, we did refer it to the AG, and they determined it was uncollectible. He did owe $18,000 initially in February 2012, but for whatever reason, in February 2015, a payment appeared. I'm not sure what prompted it, and maybe you know, Debbie.
He's trying to revive his funeral director's license. Mm.
I think he needs a little bit more motivation.
What would he have to do to revive it?
Be successfully paying off on what he owes.
Or get current.
Or get current.
Get current. He'd have to be current on what he owes us.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty significant. Yeah, that's pretty significant to get current. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe he will.
If he does.
Yeah. And last, on page 66... refers to a funeral home called the Callaway Alley Funeral Home. It's in Crockett, Texas. We, as indicated on this, they did pay restitution of $8,700, and if you can see, a pretty significant penalty of $120,000. The previous owners now own that funeral home again, and we're working with them on a different matter. That possibly could be resolved here shortly. But I don't foresee any more potential guarantee fund claims or anything related to that on that particular one. Okay. I do want to mention one other one that's not on this list because it's almost hot off the press. It just came out, and I don't, at this time, envision any claims to the guarantee fund, but it relates to a press release, and it's on our website, and it was issued yesterday. It's against a Ronald Ritter, who owned two funeral homes, the Hartfield Ritter in Hearn and the Bremen Funeral Home in Bremen, Texas. This individual, we got wind of a legal contract. We wrote the funeral home, and he did come forward and say, yes, I got more. And we worked through that process. He indicated, based on the documentation, there was 14 of them that were written not properly funded through the insurance and or trust. He did not have a trust-funded permit. He's agreed to make restitution, and he will be paying a $14,000 penalty related to that action. But again, I'm not envisioning any potential claims to the guarantee fund at this time on this.
How is the penalty determined? Is it?
Good question. I was going to ask why this would be.
On this one, is based on $1,000 per contract. It can depend on willful disregard. There's some factors that we use to determine that. It can range from anywhere from $1,000 to maybe $5,000 per contract on how forthcoming that individual is, how much it was willful, how much hiding, how much we had to find that information, and how much that funeral home is willing to settle the matter. But normally, it's about $1,000 per contract, which this one was.
And how did you learn of this?
But that's somewhat arbitrary, or is there?
Really, what we're trying to do is prevent. I mean, if we can show that the fine is large enough to prevent someone else from doing it, that because you didn't make $1,000 profit, I mean, you know, by doing it as a pre-need beforehand. So what we're trying to show, make it be a detriment to everyone else. And you didn't pay for the cost to have all the permits either. I mean, if you're selling illegally, you didn't have an examination, you didn't pay a renewal fee, you didn't pay an application fee. There's lots of things you didn't incur.
So like this individual here was not operating under a permit?
Not under a trust permit, but he did sell under an insurance company as an agent. And some properly funded, some not, unfortunately.
I guess what I would be looking for was fairness in the administration of penalties.
Right. Now, this is a consent agreement, too. Now, administrative process, we would, you know, if we have to go to hearing, and you're correct, that where the attorneys can argue why it's not fair, it's caprice or whatever they believe, but these have been consent orders that they've voluntarily agreed to that dollar amount.
And the law actually allows $5,000 per violation per day. So, I mean, you could get a huge amount.
Yeah, previously, we had some that we would advise them that your penalty could be $6.8 million. I mean, it was, when you really tabulate per day, per contract, you know, it was not, that was not reasonable.
And if I could add on, I mean, it's pretty systematic, I would say, or, you know, obviously each case is different, but generally when we approach it, we usually say $2,000 a contract. And then if they're quick to agree and settle, therefore conserving department resources, then we'll often settle for $1,000. And if they're a repeat offender, $3,000, et cetera. You know, so.
So you have some mythology to.
Yes, yes. To determine. Yes.
The fines that we collect, I mean, they aren't used for anything other than department operations. So every fine we collect decreases the assessments that you guys pay.
Yeah. We appreciate that.
Yep. Well, it's only fair because y'all are doing it correctly. You are paying all the administrative costs, and therefore, if we collect those for who not doing it correctly, y'all's fees should go down, your assessments.
So if we didn't, that in fact, to some degree, fines have been an issue in this legislature where the fines would go to the general revenue in some instances. Fortunately, we didn't fall within that. But as I said, we have cost. We have staff, we have an investigator that works on these. And so it would be nice for y'all not to have to pay for them. Right. And but if we don't seek restitution and penalties, then if more of it would happen, we think. So it's, as Stephanie said, it's to try to prevent this from happening. That's why we do, one of the reasons we do press releases. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can tell you, and at least in one, we got a lot of responses from those press releases. So it's a good thing.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with the fines. I was just curious more than anything else. Yeah.
And another factor I think you alluded to earlier is knowingly or willfully, too. Some of these that sell insurance and know the law and they're just pocketing the money is different from someone that may or may not have a clue there was a pre-need regulation. And we would try to look into those factors, too. But it's hard to argue that when you're selling as an agent for a different company and not turning the money over that you didn't know it was supposed to. That's kind of a, you know.
I think a lot of time goes into that to determine fairness, I guess. All right, so let's go to item H, future meeting dates, Russell.
Well, normal protocol is we can throw some dates out there, and I want to, before I do that, though, a lot of it is contingent upon if we have a claim over the $6,500. So what we do is try to tentatively schedule 6 months out, and then we have another one 6 months. This last time, we didn't have any claims over 6,500, so there was no point in bringing y'all here to have one. But what I would suggest is we can tentatively, I have some dates, if you want to put them down, as it gets closer, if we don't have any claims at that time that require the approval, then we can defer it or not. A couple of dates that I'm that I looked at is like the Wednesday, November the 11th, or Wednesday, November 18th of 2015, or Thursday the 12th, or Thursday the 19th are tentative dates that we could have.
Of November.
That's
okay.
November.
So November 9th, 11th.
Yeah, 11, 12, 18, or 19.
Now, let me clarify. 11th or 18th? Or 12th or 19th, 2 days only. Yes, I'm not saying the whole week. I'm just trying to give you, because we've had problems in the past where sometimes schedule conflicts and such. And the closer it gets, I try to get at least a month notice or 6 weeks even. Mm-hmm. And as you got this time, then someone has a conflict, I try to reschedule it.
In the afternoon.
Generally, it has 1:30 been 1:30. About 1:30 to get. Hopefully allows people to come in the same day and go home the same day. Mm-hmm.
It is a good so far.
Okay. And I'm hoping we won't have to have one if there's no claims, but you never know. But that's our, I have nothing else.
Okay, great. Any other items to come before the council? Okay, well then it is 3:02 and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you.